Greetings, friends. My name is Jessa McLean, and I'm here to provide you with some blueprints of disruption. This weekly podcast is dedicated to amplifying the work of activists, examining power structures, and sharing the success stories from the grassroots. Through these discussions, we hope to provide folks with the tools and the inspiration they need to start to dismantle capitalism, decolonize our spaces, and bring about the political revolution that we know we need. Good morning. Can you introduce yourself to the audience, please?
Hi, my name is Anne. I'm an organizer with the York Southwest and Tenants Union.
Welcome, I'd say, back to the studio because we've had York Southwest and Tenants Union on a few times. We're big fans, aren't we, Santiago?
Huge.
See that smile? Yeah. We've had Bruno on. I don't remember all the other guests' names. So much information there. We'll link folks to the previous recordings. But this is Anne's first time in the studio, so welcome. Last week, Ford announced something that blew up my social media feeds, right? I became very aware of a situation we needed to react to. And lots of videos are out there to kind of explain the implications. I think most people would understand from hearing that, you know, he wanted to end fixed leases, meaning at the end of a year, usually the first lease you sign is a year, the landlord could simply renew or not renew your lease. So you could either be, you could just be evicted for no reason whatsoever. So, I mean, what was your reaction when you heard this announcement?
It was shock. It was shock and anger. The day it dropped, York Southwestern was actually at Queen's Park at a rally for raising the rents and doubling the rates. There's been so many fights ongoing with the housing movement. And suddenly this felt like it blew all those out of proportion just because of the fact that if tenants don't feel they have the security of their lease being renewed, they don't want to take action. They're scared. It's a really, I think it's comparable to the threat of being fired and then not wanting to organize a union or, you know, even bring up any complaints at all within the workplace, right? There have been so many fights where we're trying to scrape what little we can out of the landlord-tenant board to end tenant lease security at all in this way would make a lot of those fights impossible to enforce, right? Much less get started in the first place. We can talk later about how those fights will still happen regardless because, you know, this would move us to a system much closer like Alberta's, much closer like many of the provinces in the country where tenant organizing is still strong and happening. But it would be a serious escalation about the tenant fight in Toronto.
So it was like a thought bubble, right? It was like they were going to review the idea. It wasn't actually part of the legislation that was pending that you folks were already mobilizing against. But the good news, it garnered a reaction that we needed, right? Not that you had a lack of mobilization, but people really did understand the urgency to respond to this, and they did. Can you talk a little bit about, like, once you got through your shock and you responded, York Southwest Tenant Unions, Climate Justice TO, and I'm sure all of the other tenant unions in Ontario took notice and responded in a big way. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, it was massive. We heard on Thursday. By Friday, we had a meeting and we decided to organize a mass call for Sunday. We realized this couldn't happen solely within our tenant union, that it was such a large move against tenants that we put out the call to organizations and folks who are not affiliated with any organization across Toronto. So a lot of tenants came through as well. By Sunday, we had a Zoom call that was over 500 folks in it. We got over 200 people to sign up for a broad range of actions across Ontario that we can talk about later. And that's since grown to like 350 volunteers. What it essentially was every organization just said, like, we need to do something. Some folks simply blew up Ford's voicemail, tens of thousands of angry letters. And that's part of the massive first wave that helped, help make this a provincial issue. And then everybody else decided, let's coordinate. Let's see what we could possibly do with all the capacity we have right now.
And I think, you know, what was it 2 days later, maybe you can correct my timeline. We get an announcement. I mean, I first found out through an Olivia Chow tweet. I don't follow her. It was pushed onto my feed. And very a celebratory tone that, you know, thanks to the hard work of folks like you. I'm not sure if she credited you, but basically that the premier had backed down on that idea. It came with a caveat, though, that there were still other things that we needed to fight. So I think you wanted to deflate that any bubble that you might have created in that momentum. How are you going to harness that now that that announcement is, you know, not an imminent threat at the moment?
That's a great question. The announcement that he was rolling back the apocalyptic part of this came before our mass call, actually. And so on the mass call, there was a real good chance to talk to everybody about, here's everything else that's in the bill. We're hoping it was a misstep on Ford's part to try to put this out and then deflate it. Just because by putting it out, he reminded everybody that this is an option, right? That this was on the table. I think he reminded folks that this is what landlords and the conservatives would want to do to you if nothing held them back and if nobody said anything about it. And I think that's been really clarifying for folks to realize why any type of organizing is necessary, not just in emergency moments, but to ward off threats like this in the future and to, you know, to make these things unthinkable on their side. But in terms of then talking about the other parts of Bill 60, it has been a bit of a challenge because it's a lot of technical things that happen at the LTV. The key part of it, though, is that this is a bill that makes evictions faster and easier than they already are, right? The LTP is already pretty much stacked in favor of landlords. Landlord filings get heard a lot faster than tenants do. And so the pitch that Ford has to remove the backlog at the LTP is solely the backlog on the landlord side. This bill would hire more eviction sheriffs. It does not provide any, you know, support or indication of making bylaw inspections easier, right?
Yeah, that's in my notes there, because that's been the bane of a lot of tenant unions that score victories on the municipal level, especially, right? Rent eviction bylaws have been passed in the last year thanks to organizing and whatnot. I know that some of them have problems within them, but one of the biggest problems is like nobody follows up on the complaints with landlords,
right?
And it's already stacked against renters. You mentioned the delays in the landlord-tenant board, because that is one of the selling features Ford's trying to pitch, right? Like, this will just speed it up, which seems really fair. So I just wanted to point out the difference that I scored from your Instagram account for York Southwest Tenants, is that it's already a big difference. So when landlords have a grievance and they go to the LTB, the average is, I think, 3 to 4 months. But when renters want to file with the LTB against landlords, 12 to 18 months is the average. And so this, again, like you said, only speeds it up for landlords. But like, yeah, the discrepancy is already there. And some of the other technical things from Bill 60, I thought I would ask you about, because, yeah, even I'm reading through it and it's hard for me to understand what some of these mean. But it says like it would be harder to challenge things like N11s, which I know folks are already signing under duress, right? Because they don't fully understand their rights.
Yeah. So there's a whole slew of things that essentially throw sand in the gears of tenant organizing and any semblance of tenant justice at the LTV. One of them is that before evictions cases, tenants would have to pay 50% of their arrears. This is before those cases where we know if those arrears are even legitimate.
Yes.
Right? We have been organizing in buildings where landlords regularly send out bad faith letters that tenants are in arrears. And the fact that these tenants only have 7 days to come to court instead of the typical 15, the fact they'd have to pay 50% of it before they can raise new issues about other things that the landlord is breaking within the lease. It's been difficult to shift as a tenant organizer from the knowledge we had 2 weeks ago that the LTB is already stacked and very difficult, to now thinking about the past LTB system as maybe being the better path out of this. One other note is that like when Ford talks about speeding up the LTB for landlords, what that also means is making it very difficult for tenant associations and legal clinics to respond. If you think about when tenants get their letter in the mail, especially if those tenants are immigrants, especially if English is not their first language. There are delays in terms of when they can get help and support, when they can figure out what's going on. You wouldn't see this in any other type of legal system, right? It's difficult to grasp the full effect of what this would be, just because the minutia of the LTB affects so many different tenant organizing cases in so many ways. And part of the challenge of then communicating that to the broader public right now is to then say, like, it's not just quote unquote bad tenants who show up at the LTB, right? Frankly, whether or not like a landlord lands you at the LTB is, you know, it's not really in your control. If like you can do everything right. You know, you can fall on hard times and suddenly have arrears, or not have arrears at all and be falsely charged with arrears. And once you go there, this court is much, much harder for you to fight in and for the folks working with you to help you out, right? An odd follow-up from the last time York Southwest was on this call is that our rent strikes were a big shock. And so there's a group called the Federal Rental Providers Organization. They're a landlord lobby, effectively. They were with...
like job creators. Yes. They're rental providers.
They provide us housing by evicting folks. They were with Ford when he announced this, Bill 60. And for a while, they've been pushing to make rent strikes much more difficult, if not outright illegal. They haven't quite done that explicitly, but with a lot of the changes in the LTB, it makes the mechanics of how we've typically fought rent strikes much more difficult to pull off.
I think folks will understand that if they go back and listen to that episode. One example that I can just think of is the way tenants were able to raise new issues with the LTB in response to being on rent strike and being demanded rent from the landlord. You know, it would be like, yes, but look at all of these back repairs, look at all of these complaints unmet, like look at all of these violations and whatnot that this landlord is committing. And it helped in the case, right? It helped the people on rent strike. I feel like a lot of this, and I'm sure this is not news to you, is a direct response of the organizing that's been happening on the tenant level, right? Direct attacks on the methods that you have been using to gain victories, right? And I think that I was talking to Santiago earlier, and I said, these folks have been building and building, I think, because they have been able to secure victories. This isn't to say the LTB, every time we talk about victories, right, it was always with the disclaimer that it's still a hostile environment. It's still not the preferred way of handling anything for tenants. But yeah.
It is a thing of like, we will organize whatever the legal terrain is, right? Because at the end of the day, we and our neighbors need it, right? If folks are about to get evicted, if folks can't afford the rent going up, if like, you know, if folks have their kids' bedroom is full of mold, we will organize. The challenging part about this is that it changes the legal and the political terrain, the options that are available to us in ways that would make the organizing much harder. And then I think the flip side of this is would also make it in some cases harder to bring on tenants into the organizing. One of the tricky parts of that tenant backlog at the LTB that already existed before Bill 60 is also it can be difficult to give tenants a timeline for when victories will happen. If tenants want to file a T6 and say, you know, repairs are broadly not happening in this building, it's falling apart, none of our leases are you know, really being held to by the landlord here, it can be hard to organize when you do not know whether or not when the LTB will hear you out and then grant you progress in that, right? So in this case, we've kind of had to file retaliatory T6s or tie them to landlord cases that are already being heard so that they get heard at the same time as these landlord cases, which the LTB, you know, is much faster with. The tricky bit now with this, right, is if the LTB is looking to cut down that backlog for landlords, it means we are organizing on their terrain and we have to respond much, much faster to whatever they're trying to pull next. right? There's in terms of organizing as well, there can be a difference in what tenant unions approach with individual cases with tenants and collective cases. Ideally, we try to bring all of these individual cases into a collective fight, not just so that tenants can meet each other, learn from each other, and, you know, become organizers themselves, because they, you know, on a rent strike, you have to talk to your neighbors about how you're going to hold to this, who's going to come up in court and help fight, right? But if these individual cases are significantly shorter and pass faster, it is harder to build towards that type of collective action. And in that case, that might just mean you need a collective tenants association that can just respond very quickly to these individual fights. Evictions in particular are terrifying for anybody. I think the way that we talk about this in legalese often obscures the fact that when you have an eviction threat, you are losing your home. And sometimes we envision renters as young folks or students for whom it is still terrifying. But a large number of the folks that York Southwestern organizes are tenants who've lived there for 20, 15 years, right? Tenants who have families and who tell us that, like, you know, if rent goes up by 20%, we can no longer afford to stay here, and we don't know where else in Toronto we can go. When we're organizing around this and talking to tenants now, we're trying to make it clear that, like, we are trying to make that as difficult as possible for landlords to do, right? And make it as easy as possible for you to fight for your homes.
You talk about organizing on their terrain when it's gone to the LTB, and we see these changes coming from the Ford government, who holds a majority and are completely callous when it comes to poor folks in Ontario. So, and, like, again, openly have declared war on renters. So, I mean, as much as we would love them to backtrack on a lot of these changes, forcing his hand through the LTB isn't an option. Obviously, that's not open to you. You talked about a broad range of actions, because I guess what I'm getting at here is, well, I don't even get at it. We should include the clip from the press conference given with the Ontario NDP caucus there, where Chiara says, you know, this government is not going to help you in any fashion. Like, the answer is organizing, is to join a tenant union. And I imagine to then organize outside of their terrain. So let's talk about, you know, what folks are going to do in response to these proposed changes.
It's been a bit of a whirlwind. I was looking at my calendar recently about all the events we had scheduled, and it's really only been the mass call was last Sunday, I believe. Halloween was in a few days. We've knocked on like 4,500 doors since then. What basically happened was we looked at all the organizers we had within YSW, and we sent out a call to organizers from CJTO, from other organizations, and said, let's go to Ford's backyard.
You mean literally?
Let's go to these PC areas with massive apartments, with immigrants, with the folks that we know how to organize, right? But are kind of far out in Toronto and hard to reach in typical cases. And let's knock on those doors. Let's organize building meetings after the fact and simply rally dozens to hundreds of people who have not been rallied before, because there's a very clear case now. Obviously, we would like for every building to have a tenants association that can fight for tenants' rights, right? Because we think it is only a matter of time before that fight is necessary. But often when you enter a building, something urgent needs to be happening. And if there's not currently a wave of evictions or an AGI rent increase, then tenants don't feel that urgency. But with this, it was a pretty clear case that suddenly a much larger number of buildings are viable for going in and talking to folks. I don't think the mobilization that we had on the organizing side would have been possible without the structure of the tenant union in the first place and folks who said, oh, I know how to canvas, I know how to run a building meeting. Send me 20 people to come with and then send me an address. Just let me go do it. And so we had a lot of folks volunteer to just take on buildings we identified within the first few days. Now we have a bit more of a system where we identify places, we send out the ask to our organizers on more secure channels and say, who can take this? When's the best time? And with the massive massive amount of interest we had from around the province, we've also been able to match up folks who kind of live nearby and are not usually organizers to just say, hey, you know, we have a contact on this day. Can you meet them at the subway station? And they can help you out from there. What that means is, you know, multiple dozens of folks who can door knock and pull off these actions that we just haven't been able to do at a scale like this before.
It really lit a fire under everybody. Because onboarding a large amount of people at once is difficult. You know, capturing people's anger, especially, you know, with him backtracking before that emergency call, it is so impressive that still hundreds of people showed up to the call and you were able to turn that over into action, maybe not seamlessly. You know, you're making it look easy right now, talking about it after the fact. I imagine you were already at capacity, you know, dealing with the impending Bill 60 and then having to do this. But do you want to talk about what it's been like building up the structure that you then had so that, because other cities are going to face this, right? Announcement from mayors, from their premiers, and need to mobilize quickly, harness that energy into something really meaningful, like almost 5,000 doors knocked. And I saw the video of Etobicoke Center, specifically in Doug Ford's riding, looking at the camera. You know, I am a resident of your area and I am getting organized. You know, I hope that scares them.
Absolutely. One of the mind-blowing things about the mass call we did was that about a third of the folks weren't from Toronto.
All right.
These were folks who had seen ads on Facebook, who had just broadly seen the call passed around through other tenant associations and came through. And so we've been able to work with small groups in, you know, in Barrie, in London, in Peterborough, and say, you know, best case scenario, we can send Bruno up there and he can help you out. Or, you know, we can run through the resources with you. And if you can print 100 flyers or, you know, 130, depending on how big your building is, we can give you the game plan and you can run this yourself. I think there's kind of two mobilizations that are happening that I find really exciting. Is one is the mobilization of the tenants when we canvass tenants and let them know, hey, this is who's responsible. Fill up his voicemail. Give him help, right? And he will listen to you because you're in his backyard. And it's a genuine surprise that he's getting backlash from tenants in this way. And it's not just Ford, it's other progressive conservative ridings across Ontario that are close enough to where we have people. So there's mobilization of those tenants. But then there's the mobilization of the canvassers and volunteers, folks who are from a wide range of organizations, many of whom haven't really canvassed before. I think about half to maybe 70% of the folks who are coming out to our canvases over the past week are first-time canvassers. And so in that case, it's been, we kind of have to go on the fly. The experienced organizers who are leading a canvas at, let's say, the Etobicoke North canvas, when they meet at the location, it's kind of a 15-minute canvassing training right there. And then it's a bit of like, you know, diving into it on the first floor.
I'm laughing just because, like, for folks listening who've maybe canvassed for a political party, you probably understand what Anne's talking about when you then start going for issues-based deep canvassing. My experience, like Fight for 15 and Fairness, like you could go anywhere and talk to people about a minimum wage, right? They could relate on that level and be angry, and you don't have a partisan symbol that gets people's back up, right? That maybe don't want to talk to you because it's not their party. You're like, you're their neighbors and you're talking about something that impacts them for sure. And it's almost a black and white issue when you spell it out. You're like, that is unfair. You at least have my support on this. You know, it becomes a lot easier to do. And I've canvassed with so many people because I've led those sessions where you're like, okay, here's some tips, right? Here's when to walk away from a door. Here's some safety. You know, if it's a campaign, here's some good talking points if you need them. But folks can be like, oh, I don't know how to do that. I'll just hand out a flyer. And, you know, pairing them up with somebody who's a little more comfortable talking within three doors, just let that person wander up to the next door by themselves, and you would be so surprised. They just hit the ground running, and they never look back. Like, anybody can go around and talk to their neighbors about stuff that matters like that. It's completely different than an elections time kind of canvassing that people do that doesn't always feel that great.
I think it's also very, it's exactly that. And part of it is also because the landlord lobby has been pretty involved in pushing Bill 60 in its full form, not just with, ending leases, but with all these LTP changes. It's sometimes helpful that we can research who a landlord is, go into a building and say, hey, you know, the guy you pay your rent to? That money paid for folks who are now trying to push out tenants across the province, right? That it's not just Ford passing this law. It's specifically Ford listening to the guy who is not repairing your fridge. Obviously the response is different at every door. And every canvasser has been, pretty amazing in applying their different strengths and talking to folks. But it is really a unique chance that Ford has given this like universal cause to canvas in comparison to these building by building specific things. You know, if we're canvassing because their tenants have received a court hearing and they simply need to know and show up, that can be a little bit more difficult because you need to explain what's up in the hearing. You need to also gather information yourself as a canvasser about other issues you haven't heard yet. But in this case, it's pretty cut and dry, and it allows us to move incredibly quickly. It also means that, when we coordinate with other organizations and organizers, everybody can kind of agree on what we're fighting. That, like, this would be bad terrain for all of the stuff we do. And we can all kind of share scripts and notes about what to say at the door, what to say at these lobby meetings. I want to give a special call to some of these groups, like 230 Fight Back has been amazing. They actually disrupted the landlord lobby's gala with some folks from YSW a few days ago.
Yay.
Friends of Chinatown, Climate Justice Toronto, People's Defense, Progress Toronto, Democratic Socialists of Canada. In Toronto, there's a group called the Toronto Unhoused and Homeless Union, TUHU. They've been organizing folks with chapters in encampments, in shelters. They're not quite tenants, but they face the same issues and the same legal terrain, just with a significant amount of increased danger as a result of their situation. But the fight still happens, right? And I think it points to how, like, there are communities in Toronto everywhere, and these are not the communities are not defined by like who is in which building or which city ward. It's just who do you know, who do you love, and who do you call home? And as long as that exists, there's something to defend, and then some association you can build out of that. I think TUHU needs to get more flowers in the housing movement for reaching places that are outside of tenancy.
I had the Vancouver Tenant Union on, and they've got a basis of unity. And within that basis of unity, they define a tenant as anybody who has to rely on others in some form for accommodation. And so they define folks who are unhoused as tenants, and then thus part of the tenant union. So it was just to kind of bolster your point there, Anne.
Yeah, and the lines between being a tenant and being someone who's unhoused are very blurry. These organizations may not work together that frequently on a large scale, but everybody's in group chats with folks, right? Everybody has friends who know people in other areas of the city that we don't typically organize. And so part of why we've been able to reach, 4,500 doors, coming up on 5,000 with a few weeks to go, is we can say, hey, there's this address. We are completely out this week. Do you know anyone who can take it?
I think, talk about being in people's group chats. You just listed quite a few of our former guests, right? And so I'm familiar with a little bit the infrastructure that already existed. And I know y'all were talking to each other before. But to see something that was so scary, apocalyptic, I think is even one of the words used there, the fixed leases, was that spark, you know, sometimes you don't know where sparks are going to come from, but the need to build that tenant class mentality, you know, you can do it on a landlord by landlord basis. Almost everybody hates their landlord. They understand the power imbalance. They can feel it in their being, right? It doesn't feel good. It's awful. But mobilizing against them is sometimes a different story. But when something like this, like systemic kind of changes being proposed, that would be, you know, have huge implications, really does sometimes do the work that you've been trying to do for years. You know, piecemeal by piecemeal, building by building is how to do it. But getting these kinds of boosts from unsuspecting places can be a bonus. Yes.
I think one thing I've been trying to draw from this is that the brutality that board and landlords have can shock us sometimes, just, you know, in the pure scope of it. But it also creates the same people who are going to push back against them, right? They want too much to be nice to tenants. They can't help but, you know, make tenants who are willing to hold a lobby meeting and push back. You know, even in these 4,500 doors that we're knocking on, folks have fought before. You know, even if that hasn't been with an official tenant association, there are folks in every building who, you know, gone to the LDB and won there against all odds. There are folks who know how to do this, but do not have, you know, a broader organization or movement to tap into. And those folks will keep popping up across Ontario so long as we have this current system of rental laws. I think our job as organizers is to, like, we take those conditions and we build the strongest social force that we can out of those conditions, right? It doesn't mean that the terrain is easy. The brutality also makes folks who are scared of eviction, you know, who, and you know, this includes folks who don't want to ever interact with the LTB because they don't have status, you know, or they're students on a visa, things like that. And we find ways to bring them in. But the core thing I found, at least at these campuses, is there's a baseline anger and frustration of, we were already dealing with so much nonsense. You want this too? So that's my hope for this. And I think that hope's been a little bit validated by how fast the mobilization has been, even from groups who were not with the MATS call. One of the tricky things here, right, is when you're organizing, landlords really do have a lot of resources to push back against things. You know, it's rare that an organization can really bring the full type of legal suite that landlords do to every case. There are amazing legal clinics and community paralegals, but there's just not enough of them for all the nonsense that's happening. And so if we're talking about people power then, and the millions of tenants that are in Ontario, it's kind of clarifying to see that, like, this is creating people who want to do something about it, who before felt like things were tolerable. And I hope that if King of Surma, if these landlords cannot help but make things intolerable, then we can reach all the folks who have something to do about it, right?
Yeah, but we always say we wish it didn't have to always make it worse before it got better. You know, we understand that that's the reality, that some people just have to experience hardships and oppression firsthand to, you know, become resistance fighters in their own way. And but it would be nice to find a formula that got people there with without those conditions, but I don't think we've yet found them, because yet that just the idea that they floated that around. I know you thought or you expressed that perhaps it was a misstep. You know, it's one of those things that politicians do. They just put it out in the public just to see, like, what'll people do? Like, it's like chum in the water. Like, are there sharks here or not? And a lot of the time there's not, right? We're exhausted. We don't have time to respond to every threat coming from government. But this was something else. And I think, yeah, you hit it on the head there when you expressed that response was possible because it was a horrible idea, but because you had the structure there. So, you know, tenant organizing, I will link all of the episodes there because, yeah, that is the answer.
One of the big challenges here is to also, when folks join a tenant association, it's not like they sign up for a service with a nonprofit, right? It's you as a neighbor decide to take on a new role within your community. And it's a community that suddenly extends beyond the boundaries of your unit. If tenant associations are larger, then that's a community that extends beyond your immediate building. Maybe it's, you know, with other folks who share the same landlord. And that new role you take on, it has some new responsibilities. You know, you have to come to a few meetings, you have to be a little bit informed, but it brings a lot of meaning and a lot of, frankly, power that folks didn't have before. Sometimes it also brings resources. You know, these are folks who can then pool together for certain fights, you know, who can access printers and all these things. I think part of the hope here is that, like, because there's not enough legal resources for all of us as individuals to constantly fight at the LTV and constantly put out fires, it just makes sense as individuals to take on that new role in the community for ourselves. I think sometimes about the case that in the United States, for example, there are nowhere near the number of labor inspectors you need to handle the amount of labor violations that happen, right? And so in a lot of cases, if you get injured, OSHA's not going to hear about it unless there is a union representative who you can talk to right away, especially if you're a worker who only speaks Spanish or Hindi, right? And so in this case, if we say that the public sector doesn't have the, is not putting in the resources it needs to actually do enforcement of the bare minimum laws that do exist, then we need to be that point of contact for folks, right? And when we say we, I mean all of the tenants, right? I don't mean that, you know, I don't mean Bruno and Kiara being omnipresent in every building.
Even though they seem to be.
I think Bruno can teleport. I need him to tell me how. But, you know, that means like everybody knows someone in their floor or has the WhatsApp and can say, hey, I have a problem. What's up? And the tenant association can immediately find the folks who can help them fight that. This has suddenly called so much attention onto how obtuse the LTV can be. It doesn't mean we're never going to fight there again. We still have to. But I think it's really made the case for regular folks that, like, this is untenable and you need to get organized now. One of the reasons we see this as an organizing fight and not just an advocacy fight is that if we simply call our MPs and the bill doesn't pass, but then we just go back to being individual voters, there's nothing stopping this from, you know, for trying this again in a year or a different version of this. That's harder to tell, right? It's the same thing when it comes to if you are a renter and you get an N11, you can push it back, but it's going to keep coming back eventually until the landlord is, you know, faces some real consequences for, you know, spuriously applying these things. There's a building I organized in before, I've been organizing in before Bill 60, where folks have gotten false eviction notices 3 to 5 months in a row. And because eviction can also be like a humiliating experience, they haven't told each other about it. So with the tenant association structure, we've been able to find, you know, 8 folks who had this across multiple buildings. And we were sure we're going to find more once we talk to people and say, like, hey, this eviction is not, it's nothing you've done wrong. And in the case that you fell on hard times and had arrears, you know, then we don't think that's your fault, right? I think it's about bringing people into a larger community, even when the reasons they have to join that are because they admit they're in danger and have precarity, right? I think it's somewhat different from labor, where you can take in the pride that you have as a worker, right? The pride that you are committing to this workplace and you have built this company. I don't think tenant identity has the same types of things we can pull on. I mean, part of this that's frustrating, right, is that this bill is massive. A lot of folks didn't hear about this by the time we knocked on their door, right? Even when it came to the elected representatives who are supposed to be aware of what's happening in Parliament and let them know, you know, when real pressure should happen. So, you know, if no one else is going to do that, it's got to be the community. It's got to be their neighbors, right?
There's no way I would have known about Bill 60 if I wasn't following all of these tenant unions on Instagram. No, absolutely not. And frankly, I don't think I would have heard about that announcement, although it did make a little bit of noise on social media because it was just so seemingly awful. But definitely wouldn't have gotten that kind of response had that not been in that circle myself, right? But I think you folks did a good job of kind of reaching out beyond your current connections, which I imagine have grown quite extensively since the last time we had you folks on. I mean, any idea of how many buildings in Toronto have a tenant organization? Is that something we can even start to measure?
Folks are trying, but these are things that they're not reported or even tracked by, you know, government data sets. These kind of have to be anecdotal where we reach out. I think the places where you'd find evidence of a tenant association are also pretty scattered. Some folks are on Facebook. Some tenant associations are kind of in name only and set up by the nonprofit that runs the, you know, the housing complex.
Kind of like some student unions.
Yeah. And, you know, and in that case, it's just as we organize, we have to be taking notes as a movement. And we have to be documenting what real progress we've made. Also, like the fights that we are picking up on. Because there, in some cases, right, like tenant associations are not always active and on the way that labor is, because there's no legal status for a tenant association. That it's not a legal entity that comes into existence and has protection. It only exists insofar as the neighbors keep participating in it. So I think it's a really thorny research question, but we have to do it. And I think right now is a moment of like, there's all these things that we've had to do that were long-term, and now we have the impetus to do it.
If you only had a research team, right? Like a fully staffed research squad working on it 24/7. I know of all the things that we need to do, eventually have to prioritize, sometimes reaction.
One thing that's interesting, though, is that tenant associations don't, if a building doesn't have a tenant association, that doesn't mean it's unorganized. Folks already know each other. There are folks who will regularly text each other when the laundry machine is broken, right? And so when we enter a building, we need to map out those folks who kind of already have the blurry structure of an association and then help them transition into something that is more permanent and has fighting power. So I think the estimate we have of like, oh, tenant union density is super low, kind of misses the fact that like folks, if we're building on top of communities and just giving communities another arm to fight with, we're never starting from scratch in a building.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And again, the parallels are there to other canvassers who've done it, where you find a building captain, you know, a super enthusiastic person who has not yet been mobilized into the cause, but you can spell out a structure for them and give them a hand in replicating the work that's been done, and it can be done. So, because I know that there's a lot of unaffiliated tenants probably listening in and just wishing that perhaps their building had a tenant union, but I think you folks have also proven the value of just uniting unaffiliated tenants that maybe don't have the same landlord, but are clearly in the same struggle, right? Which becomes more evident when the province picks on them.
Right. Right. And you know, in that case, I think there's kind of two things. If you're listening and you're not quite part of an association, one of the things you can do is join the massive volunteer pool we have. So there's a link on our website of tenantunion.ca/action. So that'll lead you to a Google form where you can say your availability, and you know, we'll plug you into one of the many buildings that we identify every week. And that means you can go out, someone will train you in how to canvas or things like that. If you can't come to a canvas, then there's options in that form to then say like other things you can help out with. If you want to do video editing, if you want to just print flyers at, you know, in your neighborhood and send them around, That's fair too. And then outside of this, past Bill 60, the thing is, New York Southwestern tries to send organizers whenever we get calls from folks. But if folks are outside of Toronto, we're also always happy to share our resources. So if you want to hop on a phone call with a tenant union person, just email the tenant union. That's info@tenantunion.ca. And we'll try to get up a Zoom call or an email, something that can, you know, help you step through these things. Because one of the advantages of us not, you know, having the strict legal structure of labor is also there's no strict path to get here, right?
No membership fee. Well, you know, your work.
Right. You know, if it turns out that you want to just build a WhatsApp or you want to start a petition, things like that, then it's actually pretty easy to organize your community.
I love this because, you know, it doesn't just end at the tenant class, right? It's all of these skills transfer into mobilizing against all of them, you know, within all of the movements that we talk about on the show. For folks who just heard that, maybe you're trying to scramble and write down all these websites, these will all be linked in the show notes. So the call to action will take you right there to their website so that you can join that volunteer pool and find out more about them and other tenants organizing in Ontario. I can't thank you enough. I mean, I thank all my guests for the work they do on the ground, but the audience will know I get extra excited when I talk about tenant organizing because of the potential I believe it holds to be like transformational. And yeah, it's rather than looking at it as the working class, you know, it provides so many different avenues of organizing than I think anything else does. And building community where you are, where you live, right, where your family is at, is obviously the value of that is evident, right? Considering what we're all going to have to go through, whether we rent or not. But yeah, no, thank you for coming on the show. Is there anything you felt like you didn't get to say or plug before we go?
I think one thing that's kind of on my mind as an organizer is looking at the situation in the U.S. with ICE, that you suddenly have this unprecedented federal attention that is tearing through communities. But you also have community groups that are handing out whistles. Like Chicago has whistles on every block. There are these networks, some official, some not, where folks, they say where you can get lawyers. They say who's in which facilities. They're up against maybe one of the most powerful forces that we an organizer can be up against today, right? But because that community structure existed, they have a chance. And I think about the other potential fights that are coming down the pipeline in Canada, right? Where we have our own backlash towards immigration, other very creative consultant design ways to evict people, right? There are so many cases where people will suddenly need someone to call for help, and that won't necessarily be 311. So part of the long-term goal of community organizing, be it through a tenant association, you know, be it through any number of groups, is so that you have people who can help. And so that you as a community member can also, you know, partake in that, right? That the resources from this, we know, are not going to come from the top. If anything, the danger typically comes from the top. And by the time we get the news that, you know, in the case of Chicago, by the time Chicago got the news that ICE was coming, there had to be folks ready and talking to each other. Well, one of the values here is that by the time Bill 60 dropped, there was already these tenant associations. So my long-term scope with this is that the bill will still be catastrophic if it passes. But if it didn't, or if there was any other law, these organizations would still be absolutely essential. And they will be essential until we have a just world where we're not fending off these dangers, you know? But until we are, we'll be here, right? And we'll be growing.
That is a wrap on another episode of Blueprints of Disruption. Thank you for joining us. Also, a very big thank you to the producer of our show, Santiago Halu Quintero. Blueprints of Disruption is an independent production operated cooperatively. You can follow us on Twitter @BP of Disruption If you'd like to help us continue disrupting the status quo, please share our content, and if you have the means, consider becoming a patron. Not only does our support come from the progressive community, so does our content. So reach out to us and let us know what or who we should be amplifying. So until next time, keep disrupting.